A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this prompt about moving. Specifically, the idea of walking the route before moving day. He's moved a lot over the last decade, and he's become convinced that physically walking the path movers will take, checking clearances, measuring dimensions, scouting hazards, is something every prospective mover should do. He wants to know if professional movers actually do this, and what specifically to look for when you walk the route. Honestly, this is one of those things that seems obvious when someone says it, but I don't think most people ever think to do it.
Most people don't. And this is one of those rare areas where a tiny time investment up front can save you hours of chaos on moving day. I love this question because it's simultaneously practical and almost never discussed in standard moving advice. The typical checklist is all about packing boxes and labeling cables. Nobody talks about recon.
You're making it sound like a military operation.
It kind of is. A moving day is a logistics operation with a deadline, heavy equipment, and civilians wandering through the kill zone. I mean, not kill zone, but you know what I mean. The point is, professional movers absolutely do recon, just not in the way most people imagine. The big national companies, the ones with branded trucks and call centers, they typically don't send someone to walk your specific route in advance. They rely on standardized truck sizes, standard equipment, and experience with common building types. But the smaller, high-end local movers, the ones who charge more and have waiting lists, they often do a pre-move walkthrough. Some even require it for complex jobs.
Daniel's instinct is correct. The pros who care about avoiding disasters do exactly what he's describing.
And here's the thing. Even when a moving company doesn't do a formal walkthrough, the crew chief is essentially doing rapid recon the moment they arrive. They're scanning doorways, checking elevator dimensions, looking at stairwells, assessing the truck parking situation. They're doing in 60 seconds what Daniel is proposing you do methodically a day or two before. The difference is, when you do it in advance, you have time to solve problems. When the crew chief does it on arrival, they're already on the clock and the truck is idling.
The real question is, what are they looking for? What should Daniel be checking when he does this walk?
Let me break it into categories, because there's actually a systematic way to do this. First category is the truck approach. Where does a truck park? Not where do you park your car, where does a 26-foot box truck park? Most residential streets, the answer is complicated. You need to look at overhead clearance from trees. You need to check if there are any low-hanging power lines. You need to see whether the truck can actually get close enough to the building entrance that the crew isn't carrying a sofa 200 yards.
If the answer is, it can't park close, what then?
Then you might need a shuttle. Some buildings, especially in dense urban areas, require a smaller truck to ferry items from the big truck to the building. That's a thing that exists, and it costs extra, and if you don't know you need it until moving day, you're scrambling. But if you walk the route on a Tuesday afternoon and realize the only parking within a block is a loading zone that requires a permit, you now have 48 hours to get that permit. Some cities require you to reserve loading zones days in advance. San Francisco, for example, you need to apply for a temporary no parking zone at least 3 business days ahead.
3 business days. That's the kind of detail that turns a moving day from a nightmare into something survivable.
And most people don't know it until the truck shows up and the crew says, we can't park here.
Truck approach is step one. What's step two?
The path from the truck to the door. And I don't just mean, is there a sidewalk? I mean, are there steps? Are they wide enough for a dolly carrying a stack of boxes? Is there a ramp? And if so, what's the grade? Is there a gate that needs to be propped open? And if so, does it have a closer mechanism that's going to fight the crew every time they go through? Is the path clear of decorative rocks or garden hoses or kids' toys or anything that becomes a trip hazard when you're carrying a dresser?
This is reminding me of something. When we moved into this place, there was a single step at the front door that was slightly taller than standard, and every single heavy item had to be tilted at an angle to clear it, and the movers curse that step for 4 hours.
That step is exactly what Daniel is trying to find before moving day. A non-standard step height. A tight corner. A doorway that's 30 inches wide when the standard moving box is 32. These are the things that turn a 4-hour move into an 8-hour move, and movers charge by the hour.
You're measuring doorways.
You're measuring everything. Bring a tape measure on your walk. Measure every doorway the furniture has to pass through. Measure the width of hallways, especially at corners. Measure the interior dimensions of the elevator if there is one. Most residential elevators are not designed for king-size mattresses or 8-foot sofas. You need to know whether your furniture fits before the crew tries to angle a couch into an elevator and discovers it's physically impossible.
You just abandon the couch?
No, you plan for it. If the elevator won't work, you need the stairs. And if you're using the stairs, you need to walk them. All of them. Look for tight landings where a long item can't make the turn. Look for low ceilings on stairwells. Older buildings sometimes have headroom issues that make it impossible to tilt a tall dresser vertically. Look for railings that are loose, steps that are uneven, any obstacle that makes carrying something heavy more dangerous.
I'm starting to realize this walk could take an hour.
And that hour could save you thousands of dollars and a lot of damaged furniture. Here's another thing to check, the floor surfaces. Are there hardwood floors the movers need to protect? Are there area rugs that should be rolled up in advance? Is there a threshold between rooms that could trip someone? Are there narrow hallways where wall corners are going to get scuffed no matter how careful the crew is? If so, you might want to put up temporary corner protectors. They're cheap foam things you can buy at any hardware store.
The corner protectors. I've never once in my life thought to buy corner protectors before a move.
Most people have it. But professional movers carry them, or at least the good ones do. They also carry door jamb protectors, floor runners, and moving blankets specifically for wrapping banisters and railings. The point of walking the route is to identify what protection you need, so you're not watching a mover's dolly scrape a 4-foot gouge into your freshly painted hallway wall.
That's just the new place. What about the departure point?
You walk that route too. And you do it with the same level of scrutiny because you've been living there and you've stopped noticing things. That loose floorboard you step over automatically every morning? A mover carrying a box won't see it. That light fixture in the hallway that you duck under without thinking? Someone carrying a mattress won't duck in time. You've habituated to your own hazards, and that's what gets people hurt.
You're saying the walk is as much about the place you're leaving as the place you're arriving.
And there's one more thing on the departure side that most people completely overlook. Disposal. Where do the movers put empty boxes as they unpack the truck? Where do they put packing paper and tape and plastic wrap? If you're in an apartment building, there's probably a designated trash area, but is it accessible during the move? If you're in a house, can the crew put debris at the curb, or does your municipality have rules about when you can put out bulk waste?
I've never seen a moving checklist mention trash logistics.
Because moving checklists are written by people who've never actually moved anything heavier than a lamp. The real expertise lives with the crews who do this every day, and they'll tell you, debris management is one of the first things that goes wrong. You finish a move and suddenly there's a mountain of crumpled paper in your driveway and the truck needs to leave and nobody knows where to put it.
Okay, so we've covered the truck approach, the path, the doorways and elevators and stairs, the floor protection, the departure hazards, and the trash. What about timing? Does the walk need to happen at the same time of day as the move?
Because traffic patterns change. A street that's empty at 10 in the morning might be completely blocked by school pickup at 3 in the afternoon. A loading zone that's available on a weekday might be occupied by restaurant deliveries on a Saturday. If you're moving on a weekend, walk the route on a weekend. If you're moving during rush hour, walk it during rush hour. You want to see the actual conditions the movers will face.
Daniel mentioned that specifically.
If you're moving in a dense urban area, foot traffic is a real factor. Movers carrying a china cabinet through a crowded sidewalk is dangerous for everyone. You might need to think about whether there's a less traffic side entrance. You might need to consider whether you can schedule the move for early morning before the area gets busy. Some buildings in Manhattan, for example, have rules that moves can only happen between certain hours specifically to avoid conflicts with foot traffic and other residents.
That's a whole other category.
And it's one of the most important things to check during your walk. If you're moving into an apartment or condo building, there are almost certainly moving rules. Some buildings require you to reserve the service elevator. Some require you to put up protective padding in the elevator, and they provide it, but you have to request it in advance. Some buildings restrict moves to weekdays only. Some require a deposit against damage. Some require proof of insurance from your moving company. If you walk the route and chat with the building manager or front desk person while you're there, you can find out all of this before it becomes an emergency.
The front desk conversation is probably worth more than the walk itself in some buildings.
It can be. Building staff know exactly what goes wrong during moves. They've seen it all. They can tell you which elevator is bigger, which entrance the mover should use, where the truck should park, what time of day is quietest. They're an intelligence asset, and most people never think to ask them anything.
There's the military language again.
I'm telling you, moving is logistics. It's not about boxes, it's about flow. Material goes from point A to point B through a series of choke points, and every choke point is a potential failure. Walking the route is how you map the choke points.
Let's get practical. Daniel's walking the route. He's got a tape measure. What's he measuring specifically?
Doorway widths, first and foremost. Standard interior doorways in the U.S. are usually 30 inches wide, but older buildings can be narrower, 28 inches, 26, even 24 in some pre-war apartments. Standard exterior doors are 36 inches, but again, older buildings vary. You measure the door frame, not the door itself, because the door will be open during the move. And you measure at the narrowest point, which is usually where the doorstop trim is.
You're measuring the actual clear opening, not the nominal door size.
The clear opening. And you write it down. Then you measure the width of your largest pieces of furniture. The sofa, the dresser, the bed frame, the dining table. If any piece is wider than the narrowest doorway on the route, you have a problem that needs solving. Maybe it goes through a window. Maybe it gets disassembled further. Maybe it goes up the stairs instead of the elevator. But you need to know before the crew is standing there with it.
What about height? Are people measuring vertical clearance too?
Yes, especially in stairwells and elevators. Standard ceiling height is 8 feet, but stairwells often have sloped ceilings or low-hanging light fixtures. You need enough vertical clearance to tilt a tall item. Think about a dresser or a bookshelf being carried at an angle. The diagonal dimension matters. If you've got a 7-foot-tall bookcase and you need to tilt it to get around a landing, the effective height while tilted might be 8 or 9 feet. You need to eyeball whether there's room for that maneuver.
This is starting to feel like a geometry problem.
It is a geometry problem. Specifically, it's the moving sofa problem, which is an actual mathematical problem about moving a rigid shape through a confined space. Mathematicians have published papers on this. The most famous version is about moving a sofa around a corner in an L-shaped hallway. There's something called Gerver's sofa, which is the largest known shape that can navigate a right-angled corner in a unit-width corridor.
Of course, there are published papers on optimal sofa geometry.
And the maximum area of Gerver's sofa is about 2.2195 square units. Mathematicians haven't actually proven it's the absolute maximum. It's an unsolved problem. The moving sofa problem remains open.
Daniel's walk is essentially a practical application of an unsolved math problem.
In a sense, yes. Every move is a unique instance of the moving sofa problem, with real furniture and real walls and real consequences for getting it wrong. The difference is, Daniel gets to solve his specific instance in advance by walking the route, instead of discovering the constraints in real time with a crew waiting on him.
Let's talk about elevators specifically. You mentioned measuring them.
Elevators are a major failure point. First, you need to know the weight capacity. A fully loaded moving dolly with a heavy appliance can easily exceed the limit of a small residential elevator. Second, you need to know whether there's a service elevator and whether it's larger than the passenger elevators. It usually is. Third, you need to check if the elevator has protective pads already installed or if you need to put them up. Fourth, you need to know if the building requires you to use a specific elevator for moves and whether you need to reserve it.
So you're competing with other residents for elevator time.
And in some buildings, especially in cities with high turnover, moving slots get booked weeks in advance, especially during summer. If you're moving on June 30th in Boston, good luck. It's the busiest moving day of the year in that city. Every truck in town is booked. Every elevator is reserved. And if you haven't planned ahead, you're in trouble.
Why that date specifically?
It's when most leases in Boston turn over. It's a quirk of the city's rental market. Something like 70% of leases expire on September 1st, but June 30th is another major date. The point is, local knowledge matters. walking the route, and talking to building staff surfaces, these kinds of details.
What about outdoor hazards? We mentioned trees and power lines for the truck, but what about the walking path itself?
Uneven pavement is a big one. A crack in the sidewalk that you step over without thinking becomes a genuine hazard when you're carrying a box that blocks your view of the ground. Loose gravel on a driveway. A slight slope that makes a loaded dolly want to roll. Wet grass if it rained the night before. Sprinkler heads that stick up. Decorative borders along garden beds that create a lip to trip over. Outdoor stairs without railings. Any transition where the surface material changes. Concrete to gravel. Asphalt to grass. Because those transitions are where wheels catch and loads shift.
You've clearly thought about this a lot.
I've moved enough times and I've helped enough friends move. You learn what goes wrong by watching it go wrong. The thing about walking the route is that most of these hazards are fixable if you spot them in advance. You could put a piece of plywood over that gravel patch. You can warn the crew about that uneven step. You can remove the garden hose and the potted plants that narrow the path. You can't fix what you haven't noticed.
Part of the walk is pre-clearing the route.
Propping doors open, taping down rugs, putting corner guards on walls. Basically, you're preparing the environment so the movers can focus entirely on carrying things, not on navigating surprise obstacles. The best move is one where the crew never has to stop and problem solve. They just flow.
You keep coming back to that word.
Because it's the goal. A good move has a rhythm. Two people carry something out, two people carry something in, the dolly is always moving, nobody is standing around waiting for a path to clear. That rhythm breaks the moment someone has to stop and figure out how to get a dresser through a doorway. Walking the route in advance is how you preserve the rhythm.
Let me ask you something. Daniel's prompt implies he's considering doing some of the moving himself, even if he hires movers for the heavy stuff. Does walking the route change if you're doing a partial self-move?
It becomes even more important. Professional movers have experience with tight fits and awkward angles. They've maneuvered 1,000 couches through 1,000 doorways. If you're doing it yourself, you don't have that muscle memory. You're going to make mistakes that a pro wouldn't make, and those mistakes are more likely to result in damaged furniture or damaged walls or a damaged back. Walking the route gives you a chance to think through the physics before you're actually under load.
The physics of carrying a dresser up a flight of stairs is not something most people rehearse mentally.
It should be. Where are the pivot points? Where do you set the item down if you need to rest? Is there a landing wide enough to put a couch down flat, or do you have to keep it vertical the whole way? These are the questions you answer during the walk, not during the carry.
What about weather? Daniel didn't mention it, but it seems relevant.
If it rains on moving day, every outdoor surface becomes slippery. That outdoor staircase with the smooth stone treads? That wooden ramp? That grassy slope you were going to use as a shortcut? Walking the route in advance won't change the weather, but it lets you identify which surfaces are going to be problems if they get wet, and you can plan accordingly. Maybe you put down non-slip mats. Maybe you use a different entrance.
Moving in summer is its own category of misery.
Heat affects the crew more than the route, but it does affect planning. If you're moving in August and the route involves a lot of outdoor walking between the truck and the building, you need to think about shade, water, and rest breaks. A good mover will pace themselves, but if the distance from truck to door is 200 feet of unshaded asphalt in 95-degree heat, that's going to slow everything down and increase the risk of heat exhaustion.
You're adding water stations to the pre-move checklist.
A cooler of cold water and sports drinks at both ends of the move is one of the cheapest ways to keep things moving. Some people also put out snacks. It's not required, but it's appreciated, and a hydrated, energized crew works faster and more carefully.
There's a human element to this that I think gets overlooked. You're not just preparing the physical space, you're preparing the experience for the people doing the work.
And when the crew arrives and sees that you've thought about their needs, that the path is clear, the doorways are measured, the elevator is reserved, the parking is sorted, and there's cold water waiting, they notice. They work differently when they're not fighting the environment. They're more careful with your stuff because they're not exhausted and frustrated.
It's almost like basic hospitality applied to a commercial transaction.
And it pays off in fewer damaged items, a faster move, and a lower final bill if you're paying by the hour.
Let's synthesize this. Daniel's walking the route. He's got a checklist. What's on it, in order?
I'll give you the systematic version. Step 1, truck parking. Identify the spot, check for overhead obstructions, check if you need a permit, measure the distance to the entrance. Step 2, the path from truck to door. Clear it of obstacles. Note any steps or slopes. Check surface conditions. Identify trip hazards. Step 3. The entrance. Measure the doorway. Check if the door can be propped open. Note any thresholds that could trip someone or catch a dolly wheel. Step 4. Hallways and corridors. Measure width. Check corners for turning radius issues. Note any low ceilings or light fixtures. Identify walls that need corner guards. Step 5. Stairs, if applicable. Walk every flight, check landing dimensions, look for loose treads or missing railings, measure headroom, figure out where items can be set down for rest breaks. Step 6, the elevator, if applicable. Measure interior dimensions, check weight capacity, confirm reservation requirements, check for protective padding. Step 7, the rooms at the destination. Confirm which room is which so the crew can place items correctly on the first trip, note any tight doorways within the unit, identify floor protection needs.
That's 7 steps. That's a lot.
It sounds like a lot, but most of it you can do in a single walkthrough with a tape measure and a notepad. Maybe 30 minutes if you're thorough. Compare that to the cost of a single damaged piece of furniture or an extra hour of mover time. It's a wildly good return on investment.
Daniel specifically asked whether professional movers do this. You said the good ones do, but what's the industry standard?
The industry is fragmented. The American Moving and Storage Association, which is the main trade group, recommends that customers do a visual survey before moving day, but they frame it as a customer responsibility, not a mover service. Some high-end moving companies include a pre-move survey as part of their, quote, process. They send an estimator who measures everything and identifies potential problems. But that's typically for large interstate moves, not local ones. For local moves, the walkthrough usually doesn't happen unless the customer requests it or the company has a policy of doing it for complex jobs.
Daniel's instinct to do it himself is actually the most reliable approach, regardless of what the moving company does or doesn't do.
You can't assume the mover will do it. Even if they claim they do, the person doing the estimate might not be the crew chief on moving day, and information gets lost. If you do the walk yourself, you have the knowledge directly, and you can communicate it to the crew when they arrive.
You can take photos. That seems useful.
Photograph the tight spots. Photograph the parking situation. Photograph the elevator interior with a tape measure showing the dimensions. If there's a dispute later about whether a piece of furniture could have fit through a doorway, you have documentation. Also, you can send the photos to the moving company in advance so the crew knows what to expect.
The photo documentation angle is interesting. It's like creating a pre-move condition report.
Which is also useful for damage claims. If you photograph the walls, floors, and doorways before the move, and then photograph any damage after, you have a clear record. Most moving insurance claims fail because the customer can't prove the damage wasn't pre-existing.
The walk serves multiple purposes. It's hazard identification, route planning, and documentation all in one.
It reduces anxiety. One of the worst parts of moving is the uncertainty. You don't know if your stuff will fit. You don't know if the truck can park. You don't know if the building has rules you're about to violate. Walking the route replaces all that uncertainty with concrete information. Even if the information is, this doorway is too narrow and we need a plan B, at least you know. You're not discovering it at the worst possible moment.
The psychological benefit might actually be the biggest selling point.
I think it is. Moving is consistently ranked as one of life's most stressful events, right up there with divorce and job loss. Anything that reduces the unknowns reduces the stress. The walk is cheap therapy.
That's a good way to frame it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1810s, explorers on the Yamal Peninsula in Siberia discovered vast deposits of diatomaceous earth containing the fossilized remains of microscopic algae species that had been thought extinct since the Cretaceous period, until a 2009 expedition rediscovered living descendants of the same diatoms in a thermal spring in northern Mongolia.
To wrap this up, walking the route is one of those rare pieces of moving advice that costs almost nothing, takes less than an hour, and genuinely changes the outcome. Daniel's instinct is right. The pros who care do it. The pros who don't should. And anyone who's moving should treat it as non-negotiable prep work, right alongside packing boxes and changing addresses.
The only thing I'd add is that the walk is also a chance to mentally rehearse the move, visualize the flow, picture where each large item goes, think about the sequence. That mental rehearsal makes you a better director of the operation, even if you're not carrying anything yourself.
If you're doing some of the carrying, the rehearsal might save your lower back.
Lifting technique is a whole other episode.
It probably is. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you found this useful, we'd love a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.